Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Nall. Once again, we start our program with the latest on health and healing. This comes from the University of Edinburgh, which is in Scotland, and it's about olive oil. Now, of course, I'm talking about organic, first-pressed virgin olive oil. And it can help prevent brain cancer. Yes, a compound found in olive oil can help prevent brain cancer developing. The research into what is called oleic, O-L-E-I-C, acid, the primary ingredient in olive oil, has shown how it can help prevent brain cancer causing genes from functioning in cells. The oily substance, one of a group of nutrients known as fatty acids, stimulates the production of a cell molecule whose function is to prevent cancer-causing proteins from forming. Scientists from the university analyzed the effects of oleic acid on a cell molecule known as MIR7, which is active in the brain and is known to suppress the formation of tumors. They found that oleic acid prevents a cell protein known as MS12 from stopping production of M1R7. In this way, the olive oil component supports the production of MIR7, which helps prevent tumors from forming. So that's really important. Quote, while we cannot yet say that olive oil in the diet helps prevent brain cancer, our findings do suggest that oleic acid can support the production of tumor-suppressing molecules in cells grown in the lab. Okay, that's good. By the way, there are so many good things that olive oil does, especially high-quality olive oil, that we should be using it on a daily basis. I make sure every morning in my smoothie I put a tablespoon of extra virgin olive oil. From the University of Murcia in Spain, the low antioxidant intake, meaning not having enough supplements or foods that are rich in antioxidants, can play a role in male infertility. In an article published in the Journal of Fertility and Sterility, Spanish researchers report that reduced intake of antioxidants, such as vitamin C and vitamin E and vitamin D, that plays a role in oxidative stress, which in turn affects semen quality. So, one more reason to make sure, especially if you want to have a child, that you take at least a year and prepare your body, making sure that you go onto a healthy plant-based diet, have lots of fresh juices, and take a supplement. From the University of Texas Health Science Center, people who preserve immune resilience live longer and resist infections. Researchers from the University of Texas Health Science Center, working with collaborators in 5 countries, have revealed that the capacity to resist or recover from infections and shorten the duration of other inflammations, and this is called immune resilience. It differs widely among individuals. The research developed a unique set of metrics to quantify the level of immune resistance, and this will aid in decisions for healthcare and help researchers understand the difference in lifespan and health outcomes in persons of similar ages. This was published in Nature Communications. Now, let me just put this into a simple understanding. If you have a strong immune system, and you're going to have a strong immune system in part because of your genes, but more often than not, it's going to be what you eat, what you drink, and how much, how healthy are those items. Do they turn off oxidative stress or do they turn it on? Do you create inflammation like eating a hamburger, french fries, hot dogs, pizzas, ice cream, turns on inflammation? Whereas if you have healthy foods, it turns it off. And that means that your immune system is stronger. Do you have good prebiotics and probiotics to help your gut? Because your immune system really is formed in no small measure by your gut bacteria. If you're eating good foods, including fermented foods, you're going to have healthier gut bacteria, which means your immune system is going to be healthier. So therefore, when you do come in contact, and we all do, by the way, it's not that we can walk through a city, a crowd, be in a theater, a soccer game, and not be exposed to common viruses and bacteria. We all are. But some of us will not be impacted the same way because our immune system is so strong that when that virus comes into our breathing space, into our nostrils, into our mouth, into our eyes, the immune system has enough defenders to immediately attack and destroy the environmental antigens. But let's just say you're the average person, and about 93% of people are just average people when it comes to their health. Their selections are almost always unhealthy. They're comfort foods. They give them dopamine hits. I feel better when I have a hot dog. Okay, why? And then we find out that there's comfort foods that we take in, which we become addicted to. Smoking is one example. Drugs is one. Cocaine, methamphetamine. I'm sure you've all seen people who now have flesh-eating bacteria, where it literally is eating their face off, their scalp off, their legs, and yet they can't stop because the dopamine hits they're getting from that addictive substance is more important to them than they're killing themselves. As a result, 100,000 Americans killed themselves just in the last year from these different type of opiates. And we do it every day. But we do it in different ways. Alcohol, marijuana, smoking, which is different than the chemicals in marijuana, which can help our body. So just understand that your immune system is directly related to what you give it on a daily basis. And most people never wake up in the morning and think, what am I going to do for my immune system today, for my heart, for my eyes, to protect the retina and the macula from detaching? What am I going to do to keep the plaque from being laid down in my brain? It doesn't work that way. So if you want to resist HIV infection, if you want to resist skin cancer and kidney transplant, if you want to resist COVID-19 infection or the consequences of being strong in your immune system like young children, babies, and teenagers and soccer players are, and you don't see their deaths, and everything to the contrary, it is the strong immune system that protects a person. So that's why understand that you can have two people, 130 and 130, but one of them has a healthy diet, healthy attitude, doesn't get overstressed, another one doesn't, and one person seems to be always sick, repeating infections, and the other one never sick or very short. That's what it means. So let's just be conscious that every time you make the right decision, you're creating a balance between the CD8 and the CD4 T cells, which are the type of white blood cells. And these T cells fight infections. But an imbalance in their levels occurs in many infections, not autoimmune diseases. The balance between CD8 and CD4 cells divided into four distinct categories called immune health grades was measured. And we used to do this all the time at the Tri-State Healing Center. We would measure every component of a person's immune system, then go over it with them. And lo and behold, we would find out, so a person was socially drinking. Oh, but I never got drunk. No. One single glass of alcohol can upset the CD4 and CDC8, making you more vulnerable to inflammation and higher risk of death. So the gene expression marker, significantly high in immunocompetence and low inflammation, were identified with the immune health grade tracking optimal immune resilience. So I could tell after one interview and looking at all of the different blood markers and then following that up with what a person was telling me, how well they were going to do with the protocols and what we had to do about possibly getting a person off addictive substances, but it worked. And that's the same model I'm using today. And that's, for example, I'm working right now with a person who I've known for a long time and who had zero discipline and eating very late at night. And that immediately upset the brain imbalance of melatonin secretion, which then upset the immune system. and completely destroy this person's digestive system, much like bulimics and people suffering from any form of eating disorder, anorexia. Well, if you keep eating and just packing in the stomach, and then you purge it all out by vomiting, you destroy the intrinsic factor, you destroy hydrochloric acid, and so now you may be eating enough food and calories, but the body cannot digest it properly, so it's passing out of the body as fibrous material, lignocellulose. So now you have to completely reestablish a healthy digestive system, and you don't do that a day or a week. That may take a year. Well, then the question is, what if the person is so thin that the body's organs collapse? They're certainly going to be far more susceptible to every infection because their immune system is also adversely affected, because your immune system is coming from what you're eating and drinking, and you're just not able to absorb. So you see, until the average physician understands how to function at this level of understanding nutritional biochemistry and how they understand gene expression from epigenetic factors and nutrient input and how they know how to measure oxidative stress, then they're never going to be able to have an awareness that there are other healing systems out there that have this knowledge. Acupuncture has that knowledge. Qigong has that knowledge. Ayurvedic medicine, traditional culture medicines, they have that innate knowledge that we've put all of our trust and faith into something that does not believe in energy, does not believe in energy medicine, energy healing, and the healing energy of foods, even though this has been proven thousands of times. And that's what it means when a person, unfortunately, is over-imbued with a sense of ideological preference. I know I'm right because it's in the textbooks, and I wouldn't be a medical doctor and pass my exams and get my board certifications if I didn't follow the exact protocols, and I'm following those protocols. Okay, then why did 550,000 Americans die of cancer last year using only your protocols? And the year before, 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 and the year before. At what point do you realize that you shouldn't be rewarding yourself and your group and your tribe at the primordial level when you're failing so consistently? And they don't understand that. And we as a society don't understand that. We actually select people based upon the illusion of their importance instead of show me the results of the outcomes. Just suggesting. And finally, from Washington University School of Medicine in St. Louis, a pregnant woman, or what we call the maternal, vitamin D deficiency found to increase a lifetime of diabetes risk. So if the mother is deficient in vitamin D, then that child is more likely to grow up and have adult diabetes later in life. That's not good. Easy to get tested. And what if the most powerful way to live longer is just exercise? People are chasing longevity with ice baths and some supplements, but the benefits of exercise have the most science behind them. Now, by the way, this is from the National Cancer Institute. Now, I'm a longevity researcher. I have all the degrees. I have all the certifications. I have the laboratory applied and basic research. I've done over 165 original scientific studies, all with positive outcomes. Plus, I've done over 60 clinical studies just in the process right now of my 6 on longevity. And still, we find that each of the things we learn, like lengthening telomeres, well, what does that? Exercise. Can diet do it? Yes. Does stress play a role? It decreases the telomeres. Therefore, if you have a person that is exercising that is stressed, then you end up with a double negative. But if you have exercise without the stress, you end up with a double positive. It's a little confusing. I'm not going to go into it at this time. We don't have the time. But these are all pieces of the puzzle. Now, there's no one dominant piece. But if I were to say, what are the five most important pieces to the study? It's the type of nutrients we have today, like PQQ and NAD and L-carnosine and resveratrol. And these are the kind of supernutrients, along with superfoods, that make super juices with super enzymes that really help the body live longer by slowing down the aging process, by slowing down free radical production and slowing down inflammatory markers, which then allow the cells to be unaltered or minimally altered in a negative way, which means they're going to live longer. And that means you're going to live longer without disease. But exercise to what we need and not excessive is a very important part of that. And I've already mentioned the case where I saw a lot of marathoners who exercised, just they went out and they put it all in on that road, hard exercising. We, on the other hand, the tens of thousands of us who did the marathons together and races together, we did it differently. That's why we were called the Natural Living Running and Walking Club. We're one of the oldest running and walking clubs in America. And we have some of the finest athletes who were not elite athletes. These were just regular people. Thelma Wilson, Louise Nottage. Between those two, you've got two of the greatest athletes in human history. I mean, they've won everything. And yet, normal people, and why are they still out there? Well, Louise was killed in a car accident. But she would go to the Senior Olympics and compete in 10 different categories and set records in all 10. And Sid Howard, the greatest miler and two-miler, master miler and two-miler. And we have so many. Joan Rowland, Queenie Thompson, yeah, Franco. We have a lot of people, and those who choose to still exercise, like myself, and compete as I do now, and how is it we're still competing and everyone else that was a champion 40 years ago is burned out, injured? Because if you don't compensate for the stress of that heavy exercise, you're prematurely aging the musculature. And that means one day you're going to wake up and you go out to exercise, you don't have it. Can't do it. You've overdone it. But if you do everything in balance without the negatives, so you have juices instead of alcohol. Now, what tastes better? A glass of grape juice, orange juice, apple juice, or bourbon, vodka, gin? Huh? Which? Though we all know the answer. One is naturally sweet and delicious and filled with nutrients that help give us a greater ORAC, antioxidant. The others are not. So just remember, everything is important, but according to the National Institute, though no single thing has a track record that can match exercise in terms of protecting against age-related diseases and helping people get more from their later years. And that's true. In my last race about 5 months ago, I've got two more coming up. One of the racers who I've known for decades was 92 years old. He looks 60. His body is lean and trim, and he is terrific. He and his wife, in their 90s, they're out there doing races. Yeah, that's what it means. So we just have this false impression that by the time you're a certain age, you shouldn't be able to do a lot because you're at a certain age. All that is a myth. More on this coming up. We're out of time for health and nutrition today. We're going to take a break and come back because we've got a very interesting program lined up for you. Please stay with us. The entire industry is. Instead, they bring forward medical doctors who say with absolute certainty what you should do, what protocols you should follow. Okay. The average American followed those protocols. I'm not blaming them. I'm simply saying maybe this was a little lesson in life that before you trust anyone, do your homework. don't rely upon the so-called experts, because now we're saying, well, what were they an expert in? Misinformation? Even those who were well-intentioned and thought they were giving us the right information have not apologized. They have not come forward to say, this is my mea culpa. I'm smarter than the information I gave you. So these are all connected, including one from, and we're going to finish today with the most interesting one, and we're also going to have Richard Gale on, who's only going to report the science, no editorializing. We just want to show you the science you're not aware of. This is mainstream, independent, peer-reviewed, published science from respected scientists. None of this is being shared. The first one is by one of the five leading spokespersons for the government, from Fauci, on why you should get your vaccines. And here's the media fawning over him, as if they don't have the resources, the intellect, the education to verify, is this true? Or is he just promoting a concept that should not be promoted? Let's go to Peter Hotz on this.
That we're not hearing a lot about is the unique potential safety problem of coronavirus vaccines.
And then something changed.
Any vaccine released by emergency use authorization by the FDA is an outstanding vaccine.
J&J's vaccine has a risk of life-threatening blood clots.
When you hear the beep, that's the sound of safety.
So don't overthink it. They're both really good. They're all really good vaccines. Get vaccinated now.
You gotta call now.
If you wait, it's gonna be really too late to protect your child.
If this was your child, what happens next could make it the worst day of your life.
So even though COVID poses zero threat to healthy children,
vaccinate your children.
Do the right thing. Be safe and not sorry.
I'm strongly recommending for adolescents to get their two doses of vaccine and fully immunized after those two doses.
Advanced technology that can help save lives.
This is going to be a long-lasting vaccine.
A few moments later,
we're seeing that two doses is not holding up well for emergency room visits. It's not holding up well for hospitalizations.
Here we go again.
Everyone's going to need a booster. You need that third immunization.
Triple the amount.
Get that third immunization. The two mRNA vaccines were always a three-dose vaccine.
I've always said this is a three-dose vaccine.
But I'm not done yet.
That third immunization. The problem is it's not holding up. So we may have to look at sort of innovative solutions.
Oh, God, not this again.
A fourth immunization.
Oh, boy.
Just to keep them going.
To keep the country going.
We have to consider some out-of-the-box things. A fourth immunization.
Fourth?
A fourth immunization.
Get that second boost.
A second boost.
To keep the country going.
I've made that recommendation. A fourth immunization.
But I'm still not done.
One semester later.
Unfortunately, the numbers are starting to trend up again. So the hospitalizations are up. And so the most important message that I have this morning is get your new bivalent booster.
Willie and Lise were saying they got their booster, and I was like, oh, I need to get mine. And then I found out they're talking about the third shot. And is that the bivalent, or is it the fourth booster, or does it matter?
Don't worry so much about the number.
There's no wrong way to use it.
You have to get it. This new bivalent booster.
You can double or triple stack them.
The new bivalent one is doing a much better job. You have to get a booster.
Yeah.
You need to get this new bivalent booster. That bivalent booster for COVID.
But does everyone ages 12 and older need a booster?
The answer is yes.
Yes.
And by the way, if you're over 50 and have gotten two boosters and more than two to four months out, you're going to need a third booster as well, a fifth immunization.
Five!
I don't think we're going to need an annual booster like flu.
Eventually.
Dr. Hotez supports yearly boosters, just like flu.
But I'm still not done.
It looks as though the boosters are not holding up quite as well as we'd like. And I think our thinking is going to change, and that what's going to happen is every, you know, few months, we may need another booster.
Perfect results each and every time.
You know, we just could not overcome that massive disinformation campaign. These fake concepts of herd immunity and discrediting masks.
Well, Dr. Hotez, you are a national treasure.
It is picking off young people like we've never seen.
Dr. Peter Hotez, that was extremely informative.
Disinformation that you're hearing, that kids are fine, it's nonsense. Kids need to get that vaccination.
You healthcare workers have been our saviors.
Watch out for that misinformation.
Dr. Peter Hotez is probably one of the smartest people on this topic.
If you have
haven't gotten your five and ups vaccinated yet, now's the time to do that.
Dr. Peter Hotez, thank you for saving the world.
They also support giving that third immunization for the 12 to 17-year-olds.
People have to feel safe.
Dr. Hotez, you are a voice of reason.
Take down the fake information.
These fake concepts of herd immunity.
Our last hope is to vaccinate our way through this.
Make certain that everybody's vaccinated, including their kids. That's the single most important thing right now the American people have to do.
Dr. Peter Hotez was the person that we like to go to for the sort of expertise.
The single most impactful thing you can do is make certain that you're fully boosted and preferably two boosted.
Later. Monkeypox is a global emergency.
And it's accelerating among a specific social network of men who have sex with men, not because it's sexually transmitted.
Monkeypox is sexually transmitted, almost exclusively.
Before we let you go, we have to stop and applaud you because I had a lot of MSNBC viewers who have watched you constantly for the last 3 years or so and have come to trust you. I don't know if they fully appreciate what you have done.
Okay. So you heard in his own voice. And so we are going to challenge virtually everything he said because from our research, and you will hear Richard Gale now, we're going to show you competing evidence. This is not disinformation, misinformation. Now it is accurate information. The question is then, will Dr. Peter Hotez be asked to apologize for his errors? And how many people then were injured or died or permanently injured because they took his advice? And then that's for the courts to decide. Richard Gale, let's go through what you have found.
Yes, the average
person is not aware of. And the mainstream media, all of them, never once give this information out. Yet this is the information that a person should have in order to make an informed choice.
Yes, Gary. So let me approach it this way, because I think the best source to go to is Pfizer itself and Moderna. And so we're seeing all these different studies are coming out, and they're confirming the myocarditis, and now the new one is being with shingles because of this enormous uptick in shingles that was almost unprecedented, the neurological disorders, respiratory disorders. But the more important thing is that all these studies, most of which are coming out from around the world outside of the U.S., are only confirming what Pfizer and very likely our federal health agencies have known all along. So the European Medicines Agency, which is the primary drug regulator for the European Union, they kind of enforced Pfizer to reveal some of its documents in its vaults. And what it was discovered was that Pfizer knew, and they had in their database, so we're only looking at their database right now. We're not looking at all the other kind of databases around the world and individual accounts. But they had reported 1.6 million adverse effects. And those events were categorized into 10,000 different categories and subcategories of different kinds of serious debilitating illnesses and injuries. So this document, this 400-page document that the European Medicines Agency managed to get their hands on, showed that there were this 1.6 million adverse events. Now, one-third of these adverse effects were classified as serious. And that should be an enormous red flag right there, because in general, vaccine and drug safety studies, if you get a 15% safety signal, that should be a big red flag that, you know, say, wait a minute, we can't be putting this out in the public. So we're looking at estimated one third, so 33%. Women reported adverse effects three times more than men, and about 60% of these cases reported either as outcome unknown or not recovered. So these injuries were not just simply transient. The highest numbers of cases occurred in the 30 to 50 age group. 92% of those do not have any comorbidities, which makes it very likely it is the vaccine that caused such widespread sudden injury. So if we just kind of break down just some of the categories, obviously I'm not going to go through 10,000 categories of diagnosis, but many, many of these are very rare, extremely rare disorders that we're seeing. So just for vascular disorders from shots, there were 264 categories of vascular disorders, and then 270 categories of heart damage, and many of these rare, including myocarditis. So now what we're discovering is the independent science is just confirming what Pfizer knew all along. So the European Heart Journal, there was a, which is their one of their, you know, flagship journals for cardiovascular research in Europe. There was a very large Korean study that confirmed the disastrous outcomes of both Moderna and Pfizer's related to vaccine, this COVID vaccine-induced myocarditis. The nationwide children's hospital in Columbus, Ohio, reported, this was published in JAMA, they reported just heavy casualties in adolescents with myocarditis, and yet this is in their study was 854 adolescents, which is a very small, tiny fraction of the true incidence of the pool of patients. But the mean age was 16 years, and 90% were boys, and 74% of those occurred after the second dose. There were hundreds of categories for nervous system disorder that involved 700,000 cases. Again, we're just talking about Pfizer's doctor. This is what Pfizer has known all along. There were, and this is an interesting one, because you and I have been reporting on vaccine injuries for a very long time, and I personally can't remember any time when we've ever reported or came upon studies that showed various eye disorders. And here there were 100 categories of eye disorders from the COVID vaccine. That's about 62,000 adverse effects reported. And likewise for ear disorders. There were about 16,000 cases of tinnitus alone. And this was later confirmed by Mayo Clinic very early on when the vaccines were released. The Mayo Clinic research has observed this devastating side effect from the tinnitus. There were 225,000 cases of skin tissue disorders. This has been confirmed by Iran University of Medical Sciences, where they reviewed, they found 180 papers, reports, and the published literature showing that in the first 7 months of the vaccination campaign alone, there was this explosion of different kinds of skin rashes and disorders of the mucosal surfaces, particularly in the mouth, the nose, the anus, where the spike protein from the vaccine was causing these dermatological conditions. Pfizer had 190,000 cases of respiratory disorders and over 180,000, I'm trying to round off numbers here, cases of reproductive disorders, including erectile dysfunction in men. Now, this has been confirmed, as we know, especially by Jim Thorpe and his colleagues using the CDC's VAERS database and found that there is a 27-fold higher risk of miscarriages following the vaccines and a 2-fold increase in risk across different categories of adverse fetal outcomes. And what's interesting here is, you know, every drug, vaccines also, but the public isn't aware of this, but particularly with drugs, it's better known that there are these different categories for drugs, category A, B, C, and whatnot. And there is one you rarely hear of, and it's called category X. And that's the risk when the risk of the drug in a pregnant woman just clearly outweighs any possibility. And therefore, the drug should be flagged black box is contraindicated for any woman who is or is planning to become pregnant. I mean, oral contraceptions and thalidomide are two of the classic examples. So, you know, the COVID vaccine should be given us black box category X warning. There were over 77,000 psychiatric disorders, and this is something, you know, Dr. Peter McCullough has observed himself, showing this relationship between the psychosis and vaccine. There was a study that was done in the journal Vaccines, which is one of the, you know, mainstays in the vaccine publications. It was done out of Germany at the Municipal Hospital in Dresden, where they discovered that the spike protein can enter the brain after vaccination. There are about 10 papers describing this acute neuropsychiatric symptoms after both the mRNA and the adenoviral, that's the Johnson & Johnson COVID vaccines. There were cases of tumors, both benign and malignant. This has been, and so that's Pfizer's own knowledge, but this has been confirmed by a Greek study. It was a Greek study done with, I think, an American group as well, NASCO AD Biotechnology Laboratories. And what they discovered was that the cells,
Richard, unfortunately, yeah, we're out of time. But what Richard is saying, using Pfizer's own documents that they hid from the American public, hid from regulators, except the FDA knew this, and possibly the CDC, but they hid it from members of Congress and hid it from everyone. And the FDA actually went in on their behalf and tried to get these documents sealed for 75 years. Now, that's separate from all the thousands of studies that we have from peer-reviewed literature, from respected institutions, showing a lot more problems than what even Pfizer was finding. So this is where we believe the lawsuits can come because of malice aforethought. We'll be sharing information in the next couple of days on how the American public can now force these people into trials and hopefully acknowledgement that this was the greatest crime against humanity. As far as, I'm not counting World War II and World War I and the Holocaust. I'm setting those aside. I'm talking about in the area of health. Thank you very much, Richard Gale. Now we're going to go directly into this clip because we're running short on time. This is Thomas Binder. He's an MD, PhD. He'll give you a little of his background. Highly respected in Sweden. And he was coming out saying that much of the so-called Anthony Fauci U.S. Public Health Service protocols were wrong, and he was suggesting not to follow them. And instead of having open and honest discussion and debate, they arrested him, put him into a psychiatric institution. They did this. That's how draconian these measures were. And here is him now, years later, showing that everything he said was right, everything they said was wrong. So shame on Sweden for a lot of reasons. But this is just one in particular. You don't take someone who has a long pedigree background in a field who is challenging the existing standards and saying, we're not going to have a discussion. We're going to put you in a psychiatric institution. Here it is.
Dear fellow humans, my name is Thomas Binder. I study medicine in Zurich, obtained a doctorate in immunology and virology, specialized in internal medicine and cardiology, and have 35 years of experience in diagnosis and therapy of acute respiratory infections in hospitals, in intensive care units, and in my private practice. Others and myself have been explaining the still prevailing corona narrative since February 2020. It is unscientific, unlawful, inhumane nonsense from A for no epidemiologically relevant asymptomatic transmission over D for wrong definition of COVID infection and COVID death, I for wrong indication to test, N for non-pharmaceutical interventions for asymptomatic formerly called healthy people, are ineffective and do only harm. P for no pandemic, but plandemic. T for wrong test, and V for wrong vaccine. To set for zero COVID is an intellectual absurdity. For doing this, we were censored, labeled, or, like me at Easter 2020, even brutally arrested by an anti-terrorist unit in my doctor's office and chipped off to the loony bin because of alleged self-endangerment in COVID insanity. Today, we are totally vindicated. The alleged COVID pandemic was primarily a RT-PCR testing pandemic. Others and myself, who have a minimum of basic medical and immunological knowledge, had read the pivotal studies and have some common sense and spine, had already explained the futility, ineffectiveness, and insecurity of the modified RNA injections before their criminal emergency approval. Today, we know that they are even negatively effective, promote illness and death from COVID, and have already killed over 10 million people through side effects, prevented millions of fertilizations, and induced millions of stillbirths, in the absence of evidence that they saved even one single human life. While there has never been a pandemic of a killer virus, there was a pandemic of cowards, and do we doctors see a pandemic of severe illnesses and of sudden unexpected deaths from heart attack, myocarditis, aortic dissection, stroke and pulmonary embolism, thrombosis and inflammation of other organs, especially of brain and spinal cord, disseminated intravascular coagulation, increased infection.
Rattle off an entire list of adverse side effects. And now we're going to go to Dr. Peter McCullough. This is brand new. This was done in Panama. Hasn't made the circuits yet anywhere on the internet that I can find. And here he is, mind you, just to give you a little understanding, Dr. McCullough is the world's most cited cardiologist, nephrologist, with over 1,000 citations on library medicine, professor of medicine, and sitting on the board of all these scientific publications. Not a single blemish in his career until he challenged, why not treat the patients early? Small group treated their patients early. They survived. Listen to what he has to say. This all new stuff. For vaccine people who don't want to hear any other argument, then no evidence will appeal to a sense of reason. But for those of you who want the truth, you're going to get a whole spoonful of it right now.
Gracias, Panama. I'm Dr. Peter McCullough. Hablo en español solo un poquito. So this will be in English. Thank you so much for coming today. Thank you so much for the wonderful welcome that we've had here in Panama. I published in August of 2020 in The Hill, The Great Gamble of the COVID-19 Vaccine Program. That this was a gamble because it was rushed, that it was brand new genetic technology, largely messenger RNA technology. And I was worried that something would go wrong. I was the only public figure in America to express this concern in writing. Early in 2021, I was part of a paper published with 57 authors, 17 countries. We had urgent questions. This was sent to every government official in the world that was in charge of vaccines. And our concerns were that there was no control over the production of the spike protein. There had been no testing for genotoxicity, teratogenicity, or mutagenicity. We didn't know if this could cause cancer or birth defects. That there was a concerning study about distribution to the ovaries in a mammalian study in Japan. There was reduced fertility, Moderna had shown in a study to the European Medicine Agency. There were no safety committees to be sure it's safe. There was no safety. No restriction of the properly excluded groups from the trials. During the clinical trials, pregnant women, women of childbearing potential, COVID recovered, suspected COVID recovered, they were all excluded, not allowed to take the vaccine. Suddenly they were told that they should take the vaccine with no assurances on safety. There was no risk stratification. There was no mitigation of risks, and there was no assurances on long-term safety. We had no idea if someone takes this, what would happen now over the course of their life. The Pfizer vaccine undergoes reverse transcription in a human hepatoma cell line, and the code for Pfizer is put into DNA code in human cells as an installation. This was the greatest fear, is that a genetic vaccine would permanently alter the human genome. In one study, this study suggests that it happens at least for this center, 444 base pair, but probably the entire code is installed. So people who have taken the vaccine may have a mosaic of cells in their body that have permanently changed the genome, where now a parent cell can pass it down to a daughter cell, where a gametocyte, like sperm and egg, can pass it to a baby. This is of great, great concern. The messenger RNA was in the lymph nodes at 60 days. It should be gone within a day or two. Persisting, we don't know. This 60 days is as far as they've examined. The vaccine is in the blood circulating for 28 days. That's as long as they've looked. The messenger RNA is in the milk of women who are breastfeeding. That means it's getting into the sweat and the secretions. It's everywhere in the human body. Spike protein after the vaccine, at least at 245 days later, inside human cells circulating. That's as long as he's looked. In 2021, the total safety reports and the total deaths skyrocketed with the vaccines. More than all the vaccines combined. This is the U.S. only. U.S. only, the CDC says 17,568 deaths that have occurred. This is a tiny fraction of what's reported. The estimate is that this is underreported 30-fold, meaning 30 times 17,000 means more than 500,000 Americans have died with the vaccine. Hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of hospitalizations. The vaccine injury syndromes, it involves virtually every organ in the body. This is a catastrophe. One in four Americans know somebody who died of the vaccine. 15% of people who took the vaccine and survived have some new disease, some new illness that they're struggling with. Bollmeier has taken biopsies of young people in Germany with myocarditis from the vaccine and has found spike protein in the heart muscle. So it's proven that the vaccine is causing heart damage. 86% of young people with myocarditis are hospitalized, and that a young person who takes the vaccine is more likely to be hospitalized with heart damage than ever be hospitalized with COVID. So to make students and young people take the vaccine was never medically necessary, never clinically justified, and in fact posed harm to young people instead of benefit. A year later, 80% of the children, the heart has not recovered. it looks like it's damaged permanently. Damage permanently to young people's hearts. Unacceptable. They have the rest of their life now to worry about a scar in the heart and whether or not a scar will be the source of an abnormal heart rhythm that causes a cardiac arrest. Before COVID, the number of athlete deaths in Europe, cardiac arrest, 29 per year. Since the vaccine, 283 per year, 10 times the number of athletes dying on the field now. 2 years after taking the initial series, 2 years later, there is a fourfold increased risk of retinal artery and retinal vein blood clots. The blood clots are not coming from the eyes, they're coming from the systemic vasculature. The blood clots are circulating and the doctors can see them in the eyes. 2 years after the initial series. This is the first evidence that long term, we are very worried about people who took the shots. The long term data here are not encouraging at all. They're very worrisome. The FDA approved the bivalent vaccines for humans with no human data.
That's just some of his talk. And everyone that I'm looking at their scientific articles are saying the same thing. The death toll, the injury toll, and the permanent injury toll is just going to go through the roof. We're looking at the possibility of tens of millions of Americans ending up sick, disabled, and also a huge spike in deaths from unknown causes. The only thing that's different now than in the past are the vaccines. That's the only thing this could be attributed to. Also, we're finding out everything they told us was a lie. They said it would just be in there for a week and gone. No, almost a year later, it's still manufacturing. That means it's just crippling people's immune system, creating autoimmune conditions, which are causing organ failures. It's causing latent cancers or dormant cancers to reemerge worse than ever before. We're seeing a huge spike in cancers, huge spike in hemorrhages, huge spike in strokes and cardiomyelitis. We're seeing all this now. They lied about this. They knew this. And that's why Richard Gale was showing you. So we're going to say goodbye to WBI right now, but we're going to continue with one more clip from Melanie Phillips on the destruction of reason, because that's what's been missing, reason. We have scientific dogma, and that becomes an opportunity for people to hide all truths behind their ideology. Otherwise, smart people are disengaging from all their intellect and just obeying what's told to them. Back in a moment. In about 5 seconds, go to prn.live if you're listening to BAI and don't want to hear the news there, because we're going to go right in now to Melanie Phillips on the destruction of reason.
This is all part and parcel of the substitution of knowledge by ideology. Ideologies of various kinds. Ideologies meaning the idea holds sway, absolute sway. Nothing can challenge the idea. Why? Because the ideas I'm talking about, the ideas that are now the absolute orthodoxy on the left, are ideas which are said to embody goodness, virtue. They're said to embody the betterment of humanity. So if you stand against any of these ideas, if you say there's something fundamentally wrong with any of these ideas, you're not only wrong-headed, but you are evil, because you are standing in the way of the betterment of humanity. Therefore, you want bad things for human beings. You want bad things for the Earth, for the planet. And consequently, you can't be argued against. You must be stopped. You must be stifled. You must be refused a platform. Nobody must hear what you say. So what are these ideologies? There are many ideologies. Multiculturalism, the idea that you cannot say Western society or any society is better or worse than any other. Lifestyle choice, the idea that you cannot say any kind of family household arrangement is better or worse than any other, and so on and so forth. Now, the point about an ideology, as I've just said, is that the idea is absolute. It cannot admit to any dissent or challenge whatsoever.
So they actually do believe in a truth, in an absolute truth.
Well, rather like the Catholic Church of medieval period, believe in the absolute truth. But the fact is this, an ideology is therefore inimical to reason itself. Because if you come along with a set of facts and you say, here are facts which challenge your idea of whatever it is, here are facts which show that children are better off with a father and a mother. Here are facts which show that the earth was warmer many millennia ago. Here are facts which show whatever. And they contradict the governing idea of the ideology. You are told, no, we cannot have this. These cannot be facts. You are lying. You must be lying. And we won't even hear these facts. In other words, we're in a situation now where ideology says evidence is nowhere. Now, if evidence is nowhere, then rationality and reason are nowhere, because you cannot have reason without evidence and without the idea of truth and lies being different from each other. And so we have this really horrific and terrifying situation in which the brightest and the best of us in our universities, the people entrusted with the education of our young people, the people entrusted with the transmission of our culture, the people entrusted with thinking great thoughts, are themselves promulgating a culture which has become inimical to reason itself, and they believe that they stand for reason. They believe, and they tell us, that anyone who objects to any of this is stupid, is an imbecile. Their imbecility demonstrated by the fact that they believe in something as ridiculous as objective truth. But they themselves are presiding over and have made our universities into crucibles not of knowledge, but of the destruction of reason itself. And so what we're living through in Britain and the West, in my view, is even worse than the potential destruction of political liberty, even worse than the destruction of the very idea of the Western nation and national identity. We're living through the destruction of reason. And all around us, we find that rational argument, discussion, civil discourse encompassing ideas which may compete with each other. We may have disagreements and be civil to each other. All gone, replaced by insult. Insult designed not just to wound, but to silence.
Something to think about. Just apply everything she's just said to the 950,000, more or less, physicians, the millions of scientists in the United States, the professors, the educators, the media pundits, the civil servants, the technocrats, they all suspended reason. They all became ideologically aligned as if they were joining a cult. And think of the consequences because of that. And they're not done with you. This is just the beginning. We'll have more on an upcoming program. Thank you all for listening, and now stay tuned for Utrecht's Lead.